This episode is powered by Squarespace. Squarespace is the all-in-one platform for building your brand and growing your business online. Social media is a great way to build your brand, but having your own website is even better if you want to create more security and stability in your online presence. You can unlock a new revenue stream for your business and free up time in your schedule by selling access to gated content like videos, online courses, or newsletters with a members area. You can collect email addresses through your website and send subscribers the information they care about most with unique mailing lists. You can also create a community on your Squarespace website with a fully integrated commenting system that supports threaded comments and replies. Head to squarespace.com/alexwolf for a free trial. And when you're ready to launch, use offer code alexwolf to save 10% off your first purchase of a website or a domain. You're listening to the Alex Wolf Podcast. Interesting conversations about innovation, economics, culture, and history for the independent thinkers and curious minds. I'm your host, Alex Wolf. This episode is brought to you by Wethos. Designed specifically for small studio owners, Wethos makes it easy to scale your services up with teams and offer big, meaningful projects to your clients. Price proposals blazingly fast, find new collaborators, and effortlessly manage your budgets and payments all in one place. Set up a virtual studio for free and scope your first project in less than 10 minutes. Join for free at wethos.co. All right. So hi. Last week I made the announcement that I opened up a tip jar, like donation jar. People were asking for it. And so thank you so much. Donations have been coming in, and there's also the opportunity to become an official listening sponsor for this podcast. You can support monthly or submit a one-time donation. And I quickly wanted to just say thank you to our sponsors who donated last week. So big shout out to Stephen P, Sheree M, Byron O, Kate O, Christina L, and Marshall S. Thank you so much for your generous, generous donations. It means a lot to support the podcast. And yes, the podcast is available for free. You do not have to donate. But if you do want to, if you get value from it and you just want to contribute, there is a link in the description box. So yeah, thank you so much. This week, we are going to ask and answer this question. Why does the internet hate creators? I'm really curious. And I think, you know, the first reaction to this kind of question is, I mean, Alex, how can you say that? All, you know, social media, most social media platforms have been acknowledging creators over this past year. There have been more initiatives for creators. So I don't know if you remember, but like even a year and a half ago, the term creator was not that popular. People were still figuring out if we were going to call people who made content on the internet influencers. People really don't like that term. People hear influencer and they hear cookie cutter LA girl, you know, posing in front of a pink wall. They hear like Kim Kardashian, right? Some people sit very comfortably with that term, but there was a lot of hostility. So when it comes to platforms that host the content of whoever these people are, whatever we want to call them, they were still trying to figure out, you know, who are these people? What do they do, and what should we call them? What do they want to be called? And all of it was so new that it was forming as it was happening. And so this is an old topic for me, but we're going to revisit it because it's still an issue that I think is happening. And will continue to happen until we start to really understand behavioral economics. So as I started my first business, 2014, you have to understand that Instagram was a whole different place. You were there probably. And, you know, we understood what a blogger was. We understood that people were getting paid to run blogs, fashion blogs, style blogs, makeup blogs. But it still wasn't really clear how people were using social media to build businesses. We're talking, again, 2013, 2014. If you've heard some of my interviews, I've talked about how the year I made the decision to be a social media marketer, I was talked out of it because I was told there was not going to be any money in it, that, oh, you know, you really think you're going to help people make money marketing on social media. And I was like, yeah, I think so. Like, I was like, I really think, you know, Twitter and Instagram are going to help people's businesses. And I had to confront my doubts. I had to confront my fears and really, you know, have those beliefs challenged and still be like, okay, you know, I really do think. And so, thankfully I was right. but you know, I was too right. It got to a point obviously where I was just like, ooh, get me out of here. Right. Anyway, I'm saying all this to say that we're dealing with very new terms, very new occupations, very new economy. Okay, things are similar, right? Some things are the same. Some of the fundamental aspects are the same, right? We live in a culture where people love media. Even though we've moved from TV to the phone, it doesn't... cable's down, but entertainment is not. Watching content is not down. Those things are not down. Those things are the same. We've just sort of shifted the medium we're watching and the access of entertainment, both consuming and producing, has been completely democratized. So blah, blah, blah. You and me can start a media company from our living room, right? Very, very like common stuff at this point. So when I'm asking this question, why does the internet hate creators? Again, I can hear my brand friends, which I love y'all, and I know some of y'all listen. I'm talking about my people who work at Instagram and Clubhouse and Spotify, because their job literally is to figure out, okay, how are we going to help creators? But part of the issue is that they're asking that question in the context of how are we going to help creators help us? That is not an evil question. It's not a bad question. But the issue is that when we zoom out, it causes a problem, because if your platform is makes most of its money from distributing highly targeted ads through complex algorithms, the opportunities you think you are providing for those creators are not as lucrative as they sound. And I'm going to break that down a little bit deeper. But before I go into that, again, we're seeing incentives that I never thought I'd see. You know, I remember reading a few weeks ago that Snapchat is offering $1 million to creators who, you know, qualify for some type of entertainment threshold if they make interesting content and they're really trying to support or encourage creators to just make cool stuff that people really want to watch. I never thought I would see the day that happened. So that's happening. You know, I'm seeing conversations about like Clubhouse trying to support creators, saying that they're going to offer ways to monetize content. But, you know, most of the time, if a platform's plan, again, is to distribute highly targeted ads through complex algorithms, which I'm going to have a different name for that in a second, the way that they're going to offer monetization is usually going to be through the form of some type of micropayment, some type of affiliate payment. Now, PayPal is a business that uses micropayments. Most of our like fintech software takes a little cut off the top of our transactions, and micropayments on that scale are very lucrative. But when you are a creator and you have an audience and you're not Kim Kardashian and you're not PayPal, those micropayments are not as easy to make into a lucrative business. And then what you end up having is a bunch of people who now, you know, they're really into making content, but because their options or opportunities are limited to volume, meaning how many eyeballs, we know what happens next, right? We get a bunch of people just doing sensationalized stuff, and it becomes less about the quality of the content and more about stimulating an algorithm. And then you have the people who get caught up in the middle, the people who are not willing to go to that extent to stimulate the vanity metrics. And there's not really a place for them. I feel like a little bit more space is being made for them now, but it's not as much space as the people who focus on, oh, how do we help these platforms sell their ads? Highly targeted third-party distribution ads, okay? So let's break down some terms. As a content creator, you either are distributing your content through first-party distribution, or there is a third-party distributor. You can have both. What I mean is that you either control how you're going to distribute your content by providing some type of paywall, or you provide your content for free, quote unquote, and a third party distributor will say, oh, thank you so much for spending the entire day editing this video and the entire month planning this and you know, thousands of dollars on this camera. We're going to take this video and we're going to see if we can find a spot for it in our algorithm for you. No promises. We will try to find a spot if it meets our standards, if it's sensational enough, if it can hold the right retention for the right amount. We got your back, right? Quote unquote. And so most people, you know, when you're getting started off as a content creator, your priority is discovery. People have to know you exist. And so you don't really have the luxury of first party distribution. It's not a luxury in the beginning because you need the help. You need some kind of distributor to help spread your stuff all over the internet and hopefully put it in a place where it's going to find people who care about what you care about just as much. But the issue is that this distributor is not as concerned with putting your stuff in front of the people who will care unless it will also efficiently help them with what they're trying to do, which we all know, of course, is to sell ads. Now, sometimes this works. Sometimes, you know, you think about the makeup YouTubers who it all fits, you know, as far as like, okay, yeah, I'm going to, you know, and especially like the time too, because things change every quarter. So there was just like this period where it was like, okay, you know, there were periods where YouTube was thirsty for that type of video and it needed it in its algorithm to grow their user base, right? Now it's at a saturation point. So a lot of this stuff has to be, you know, kind of fallen at the wayside, and they're only going to prioritize stuff that can compete with all of that stuff. So the issue is, and when I ask the question, why does the internet hate creators? I know we don't hate creators, ultimately, because we're the thing that's keeping this thing going. video after video after video. I mean, it's at a point where all these TikTokers, these TikTok videos, I don't know who these people are. It's just random videos. I remember, like, you know, internet culture has always had like these one hit viral wonders, right? But there was also a period where it was like, you would see the same person more often. It was like, oh, another whatever video is out. Oh, another whatever video is out. And now I'm sensing, and I don't know, maybe it's just me, but I'm sensing that, like, it's just different people all the time, for the most part, more than it used to be. That's how I feel, at least. And so the point I'm making about that is that I know we love creators. I mean, if you think about just the entertainment it provided, especially during these dark times, a lot of people found value in just all of this content. So we know we love y'all. Y'all know we love y'all. But something is missing in this relationship as far as how much value they provide and who actually gets compensated for that. And there's been all these different platforms in my inbox every day. Oh, Alex, look at what we're doing. We're paying people to, you know, make content, and on here, for every follower you have, you know, blah, blah, blah. Like, people try to squeeze this idea that, oh, well, you know, if you go viral here, you'll make money. And I think that that's a really great idea. I think it's such a nice idea, but it is not, it does not have the behavioral economic incentive that is realistic. Okay. And that's something we have to, that's like the big elephant in the room, in my opinion, is like, okay, yeah, y'all think like this equates this simply, that you think that there's some machine where you can turn likes into dollars, and you might find some type of overlap, some type of software that provides some type of overlap. But it's not, it's going to have its differences. Now, I don't mean to sound like a party pooper, right? I already know people are going to hit me like, oh, what about OnlyFans and what about NFTs? And yeah, that's what I'm saying. Like, here and there, you're going to see those types of opportunities. But let me move into what I want to say next. So my frustration has been this. I knew from, you know, my experience years before that the money in the creator's economy, and I don't, to me, I distinguish creator's economy from third-party distribution, highly targeted ads, okay? People want to be like, oh, you know, Instagram is the creator's economy. No. Creator's economy is the millions of children who have bought cameras and iPhones to be YouTube stars. That money, that's in the creator's economy. Creator's economy is the thousands of people who have MailChimp subscriptions and, whatever email service subscriptions. That's the creator's economy, because those dollars are representative of how much people care about being able to have control and access to the people who actually want to hear from them. It's, in a sense, a type of investment. It's a type of risk allocation. Because, you know, if you've been listening to me for a while, you know that unless you own the permission to access communication with your audience without a third-party distributor, without social media, the higher a risk you have in your business. Because basically you're building a business as a renter, right? Instead of owning the assets, you rent the assets, in the sense that your following is an asset, right? If you're a content creator. But if you don't have ownership of, again, the ability to communicate to them, you are renting that access, which means you have a landlord, which means you have protocol, which means that if you do not meet protocol, there's liability in, you know, your ability to use it. You know, some landlords are chill. Some landlords, you can rent and die and you know, for the rest of your life. It's not going to be a problem. But depending on your landlord and depending on how you treat the apartment, you might run into some problems. And either way, it doesn't matter. Even if you are a good renter, what if you just want to own, right? So the reason why I think the internet hates creators, quote unquote, is because all this initiative of, oh yeah, we're creator friendly, blah, blah, blah. Yeah, that's nice. Cool. Thanks for using the word now. Like, okay, you see us. Which to me is just like, that's a sign we should all be paying attention to. Why did it take so many brands so long to be like, oh my God, these people run our business? You know, it's so interesting as a creator to see how most businesses understood, again, I'm talking about social media platforms, most businesses understood that their customers, the people who were buying ads, were the holy grail. And in a sense, they are, but we have a yin-yang situation here. Whenever we're talking about entertainment and media, the whole business model of television and radio was, if you don't have people on here that people really find value, that people really want to spend their time because they get something out of this, then you can say bye-bye to that commercial and that ad dollar. It would be a mistake to give the ad people special treatment and give the people who are providing the retention, you know, the shit end of the stick. We're dealing with an industry that just started to say, oh shit, look at the end of the stick. Oh, this whole time it was y'all. Oh, this whole time it was this black kid in his basement. Oh, this whole time it was, you know, just people we've never even had one conversation with in our whole entire life and we wouldn't even know where to find them. Yeah. Yeah, that is who it's been this whole time. Hi. Hello. And then, you know, part of what inspired this conversation this week was the Jimmy Fallon situation, which apparently, you know, if you didn't see, it was basically that the famous TikTok girl, sorry, I don't know her name. You know, she's famous. She does her dances. She's cool. She got on Jimmy Fallon because she's signed to, I forget what agency, and I'm sure they booked it. You know, you have to understand, the people in charge of these decisions, the originators of this choreography are not in their ecosystem. They're just, it's not even like an intentional thing. They are just not in their, you know, peripheral. So they have her do the dance and she did her thing and she has an audience and whatever. I'm not here to knock her or knock her audience or whatever. But when you see the original choreography from the original dancers, and it's so beautiful because it's a Cardi B song, and y'all know my special place for Cardi B because Cardi started off as just a ratchet content creator, which a lot of people don't know. Anyway, it really hurts me. Like, I watch it and I'm like, ooh, this hurts, because I know how that feels. I know how it feels to do your thing and then see how the internet will kind of like take the message or whatever, take the essence of what you're saying and twist it. And then the next thing you know, you see it on some type of mainstream channel or whatever. And you almost feel like you sound dumb for saying, hey, I was the one who, you know, because it's just kind of like you're going to get the look like, yeah, right. Okay. Yeah, whatever. And I've had that happen to me so many times that at this point, I'm not even as vocal about, you know, that type of stuff, because I understand it's not always personal. You know, I truly believe that the TikTok dance girl wasn't like, oh, here's my master plan, I'm going to take from, you know, I really don't. I think that just people are just not that original, and that's just the way the world's always been. Anyway, but, you know, I look at the Jimmy Fallon situation, and I think about my situation with the Attention for Sale documentary and then The Social Dilemma. And it's very similar. Like, I look at the original dancers and I'm like, yeah, that's me in my doc. And, you know, I look at Social Dilemma and I'm like, yeah, that's the Jimmy Fallon equivalent. And, you know, it'd be one thing if I didn't make efforts to start dialogue with, you know, people in that ecosystem, but I have. And so I, at this point, I have no choice but to kind of think like, okay, well, I guess you just don't want to talk, and that's fine. I'm a little intimidating, so I get it. I really do. And so it is what it is. I don't really, again, it might like be frustrating for sure in the beginning, but ultimately at this point, I just focus on people who do want to listen. You know what I mean? I'm not going to be one of those people who are like, oh my God. It's like, okay, whatever. And yeah, so talking back to that to me is definitely a form of like, you know, it's why I'm posing this question of why does the internet hate creators? Because to me, I'm like, something is missing if these people who originated this concept, you know, like, why does it have to be this way? Like, something, I feel like this is something that can be, kind of eradicated through more thoughtful software and just better, a better business model. So, one of the places I see a very similar type of pattern, and I posted about this on my Instagram, was so Clubhouse. Okay, first of all, I don't know what Clubhouse plans are, but already I don't hear people talking about it as much. I don't know. Maybe they might blow it out the water again, but when you're in this game for a little bit, you see how hype works. Okay. But again, who knows? They might prove me wrong. They might come back and smack us all in the face and be like, pow, we're the new Facebook. I don't know. But I will. What one thing for certain is that it's not as talked about as it was even like 2 months ago. Okay. So as the hype was building and as everybody was losing their shit, because, you know, that's what really runs Silicon Valley is, someone's figuring something out. We got to just do it. Forget thinking about it. Forget wondering if it's going to die down. Forget, you know, long-term effects. Look at those numbers rise. We got a unicorn. We found a gold mine. So what people do is they say, okay, we got to build those features too. Somebody call, don't you have a developer? Don't you know somebody who has this type of software? Yeah, call them up. We're going to acquire them. You know, we're going to integrate this software and boom, boom, boom. Oh yeah, look at what we're doing. Oh yeah, da 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 da. And then the next thing you know, oh yeah, look, Twitter's doing it. Oh, okay. And then the news that Spotify just bought a company called Locker Room. Oh yeah, Locker Room. Yeah. It's the same. You know, we wanted to create space, audio spaces, because we just felt like it was gonna, you know, really help creators. I laugh because, you know, and again, no shade. If y'all want to get, you know, your feelings hurt, okay, fine, whatever. I'm trying to tell you, I'm not trying to hurt your feelings. But I'm like, this sounds just like the Netflix situation, right? So the Netflix situation was, you know, Blockbuster was, entertainment is way slower than tech. Because Blockbuster was chilling and thinking, oh, little Netflix, you're cute, whatever. people in the tech world, they get very intimidated by small, robust businesses because they understand disruption a little bit better than people in entertainment. So, Blockbuster's chilling. Netflix is like, like one by one, you know. And next thing you know, Blockbuster busts, and we have Netflix, and no one saw it coming. Oh my God, these people, look, they're taking over. And then the thing about Blockbuster and movie theaters and that pre-streaming era is that all the studios were relaxed because their business model was working. It's like, okay, we're going to invest millions of dollars in a movie. Some of them will bomb. Some of them will sell. We're going to make sure we put stars in them and make it really juicy. And we're going to distribute the movie through movie theaters. And then we're going to make deals with companies that can put the movies on VHS and DVDs and whatever. And people can watch it at home. And they had a really great lucrative model. So we're talking about studios like Warner. We're talking about studios like Paramount. We're talking about studios like Disney. We're talking about, you know, all of those studios. And Netflix comes along and says, you know, things have changed. People aren't going to the movies as much. We're kind of in control now. So we take the pick of the litter of whose movie rights we want to have licensed so that our subscribers can have access to them. And at first, it's so funny. It really felt like we had more options. It was like, oh, wow, look at all these movies I can watch. And then little by little, it was like, damn, how do I watch this movie? I want to see this movie. Where is it? You can't watch it on DVD because you've thrown the player out. What the hell? And then it's like, well, maybe this streaming service has it. Maybe. And a lot of people weren't comfortable with paying for, and still aren't paying for individual film movies. So, so they're like, oh, hell no, Netflix, you don't get to control our distribution. Ding, ding, ding. You got us effed up. We're Hollywood, motherfucker. Like, you got it twisted. And what I've been trying to say is we're Hollywood, okay? In this social media game, we're Hollywood. We're why you're coming here. Take all the content out and keep your ads and tell me if people keep coming, okay? Hollywood was like, we're Warner, okay? We're Paramount. We're going to figure something. We'll be back. So then there was that like 5-year period where it was like, okay, Hulu pops up now. What the hell is Hulu? Well, Hulu has a combination of different licenses from FX to whatever, whatever. And then all of a sudden it's like, oh, shit, I forgot about this show. Oh, I'm going to get Hulu because this show has it. Oh, well, I heard that this show is really good. Oh, but it's only on Showtime. You know, well, Showtime's been in the game for a minute, but you know what I mean. Then it's like, oh, shit. So, boom, cable's gone. At this point, most people cut the cord. Netflix is it. Oh, Netflix and chill. Netflix. I don't even like Netflix right now. Honestly, I'm not really feeling their content right now. So Netflix was like, ooh, baby. This is my business analysis. And Disney was like calm in the corner. Everybody's freaking out. It was just like the music industry. Everybody's like, oh, shit. They turned this shit digital now. We don't know what to do. People are not going to the movie theaters. These millennials suck. They don't want to do this. They're like, oh, shit. Everybody's freaking out. Disney's in the back just like rubbing their hands together like, okay. And it took a while. It took a while for them to build the software out because they are most entertainment companies. You know, even though they're big, even though they're, you know, amazing and historic, they don't necessarily have the same tech literacy and sensitivity to just one up and done like a whole streaming service in a year. it's going to take years because there's licensing, there's lawyers, there's understanding interface. To this day, there's little things that Netflix has as far as UI UX experience that Disney doesn't have or whatever. You have Discovery Plus coming out now. Now you have Paramount Plus coming out now. You have, everybody was like, oh shit. You know, Netflix is so smart. We're going to do what they're doing. We're starting a streaming service too. Everybody, come here. Look, we did this for you. We love y'all. You know, and we're doing this because we, whatever, we want to serve you. Now, this is where the analogy of the creator cuts off, because a creator is not the same as a studio, like a large entertainment studio, because it's just mostly one person, maybe a few. And it's not as easy to say, oh, you know, Instagram has been cool, but we're going to go over here now and just start this.com, because like I said, first party distribution, you controlling the distribution is a very strategic move. Even the companies who did decide, hey, we're going to not be a slave to Netflix or Hulu or whatever, we're going to build our own thing, they also incurred a lot of risk. Because if you look at a platform like Discovery Plus, which has like OWN content, Discovery content, Food Network content, TLC content, their viewers are TV people. And they're used to, this is what people ignored. Your customer likes to flip through the channels. Your customer likes turning on the TV and saying, oh, this is on, might as well watch this. They're not necessarily looking for that Netflix experience. But because the market has changed so much, it put a lot of pressure on, on the IP of Discovery or whatever to say, oh, no, but we have to do this. It's going to make more sense because the ad dollars are dwindling. And it'll make more sense to go directly to consumer. And it's the same thing happening with a lot of creators at this point, too, as far as a lot of creators are like, yo, this algorithm is killing me. Trying to sell ads, you know, if we go at this rate, we're not going to be here in 5 years. We need to put up some type of first party distribution. If y'all really love the content, we got to change things up. We need you to just get it. It's funny because I have Discovery Plus, 90 Day Fiancé. Hey, what's up? What's good? TLC is lit. TLC is the most ratchet channel on television. And that's why I love it. So, you know, the irony of the whole situation is that the pressure that the businesses were feeling to serve, and not just serve, but like compete, they ended up realizing like, you know, we're going to create all these options. And so here we are thinking we split the cable bill from $70 to $12.99 or $8.99. Now, if you look, and if you really want access to all the entertainment coming from studios, your bill's going to still be, after accumulating Hulu, Netflix, Disney, blah, 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 $60, $70, if not more. Apple TV, Amazon Prime, if not more. Oh, well, isn't this funny? We're in the same spot we were before. And now guess what? Your customer, the burden has come on the customer. The burden has come on the people who were providing the retention, the actors, the producers, the blah, 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 the people who were making the stuff. Because the business in between the media creators and the people who wanted to consume it just was shitfully thought out. Okay? It is 2021. Why is it that if your audience wants to hear from you, the only way you can make that happen effectively is by incurring a huge risk of renting the access to them? Why is it so hard We live in the age of communication. For the people who want to hear from you, to hear from you. I'm just saying. Without all this crap in between. And so when I saw that Spotify bought whatever, this company that has the same technical capability of Clubhouse, you know, I do respect the effort. It's better I see people trying than nothing. But at the same time, what you're doing is you're spreading lucrative opportunity, and meaning like you're not spreading it, you're diluting it. That's what I mean. Like the spread of, where do I go? You know, I'm just trying to talk to my audience. That's it. I got to do this now, and I got to do that. No, you're just trying to make me jump from this to this to that because you're looking out for yourself. Which platform is looking out for us? And there are some. I'll name Twitch. Twitch is one of the ones, and of course, Patreon and stuff. Those business models are built off of, if the creator wins, we win. That's what we need to see more of for me to feel like the internet doesn't hate creators. I don't need you to create a creator's account and, oh, look at what we're doing. Look at us. Oh, yeah, creators. Look, go create. Go, go, go. Look at them. Yeah, make that content. We'll be here. No, 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 no. I need your money to be tied with mine for me to believe that you give a shit. And I need y'all to not take so long. Y'all want to wait and wait and wait and wait and wait and wait and guess and guess. And you're scared, you're scared, you're scared, you're scared. They're very scared. Well, right now we're making most of our money from ad sales. And you know, if we do them. Okay. Okay. You know, you're playing with fire when you're doing that. There's a difference between a company that sells ads and sells conversations. I am a marketer. I have no problem with ads. I think, you know, we just have to, again, be sensitive to the difference between, are you here because you want people to have a good time? Or are you here because you want to, you don't care whether or not people have a good time. You just care more about whatever, selling stuff. As a creator, we have to care about both. We have to care about both. And it's actually, I think, healthier that way. It's more long-term that way. It's less of a threat to society that way. And you just got to be careful, tech companies, thinking that, oh, well, we're going to start that too. Especially, okay, here's where the real culprit is. It's the duplication of internet behaviors on different platforms. We saw this happen, y'all, when Instagram stole stories. The reason why Snap had the drop-off was not because people didn't like Snap. It wasn't because, oh, you know, Snap, you know, it was because they stole an internet behavior that we didn't see the point of duplicating. If I have stories on Snap and Instagram, I'm not going to do both. I'm going to do one. So now you had a bunch of people run to Clubhouse, building their whole, changing their whole business model, pivoting everything. I'm going to build my Clubhouse up. Oh, Clubhouse is the future. Yeah, you're talking about it too. Yeah. You got the invite. Yeah. We're here. Growing it. And before you even have a chance to exhale, you got all these companies trying to duplicate it. I'm not saying that, again, people are going to come to me with their strong opinions. I'm not saying it's dead or it will die. I'm not saying that. This has nothing to do with this. This has to do with the volatility of your business. I care less about if Clubhouse is successful and da da da. At the end of the day, because you're still renting assets, which I don't even know if you can. That doesn't even sound like it makes sense. You can't rent assets. You have to own assets for them to continue to make money. So what I'm asking my tech companies, create internet behaviors that inherently protect your creators from needing to bounce from one thing to the next. We got people out here doing reels looking like, oh God, no offense, but I'm just like, I can tell when someone's doing reels because they love it versus like, I gotta keep up. Look at me, point, point, point. And I'm like, that's the internet hating creators. When you're making us hop, skip, jump, ooh, look at my little dance, when we don't want to. Yeah, I will close with just the fact that if a company like, you know, Spotify, Clubhouse, Instagram, whatever, they look at us as creators and they don't quantify us as individuals. They can't quantify us as individuals because of their based on their business model. As individuals, we are worth nothing. I think creators provide too much to have so little power in this dynamic. So that's what I had to say on that. Hopefully this was an interesting episode. Let me know your thoughts. And yeah, you can tweet me, message me, whatever. And thank you so much for listening. All right, bye. Thank you for listening to the Alex Wolf Podcast. If you enjoyed this episode, please leave a review. And if you aren't already, make sure you're subscribed to this podcast on Apple, Spotify, or wherever you listen to your podcasts. For more resources on innovation, economics, and culture, visit alexwolf.co/newsletter and sign up for my email list. Thanks.